Thank you for your attention. I'm Dan Gibbons. I'm the CEO of City Club, and I am here on behalf of our Board of Governors, and we have our treasurer, Omar Dagestani, here. Omar. And our chairwoman, Jackie Robinson-Ivy. Jackie, right there. On behalf of our board, welcome to City Club, where we gather, of course, some of the most amazing people in the city to help move our city forward. And there are so many amazing people in the room. We love sampling it, so you understand who's here. I'm looking right at Dion Dawson, one of our honorees from last year. Michael Fosnock from Clayco. We have a special group here. There's a table right over to the right here, and many of them are from Kenwood Academy High School. And if I hear correctly, that is the Lieutenant Governor's High School. So we have Principal Karen Calloway is here, and Julie Stanton, the Director of External Partnerships. So Lieutenant Governor is a graduate of Kenwood Academy, along with her fellow grads who are also here, Tawa Mitchell from the MacArthur Foundation. Assessor Fritz Kagi is here. Assessor Kagi, thank you all for thinking to put that incredible table together. UIC Chancellor Marila Miranda is here. Thank you, Chancellor, for being here. We have quite an international presence here today. The Consul General from Ireland, new to Chicago, Brian Cahalane is here. Brian, welcome. We also have the Canadian Consul General, and Madeleine Fourcroy. Madeleine, welcome back. And, of course, where is he? The Consul General of the Bahamas, Michael Fountain, right up front here. Lori Glenn from Think Inc. is here. I already mentioned Loretta from MPEA. Thank you, Loretta. Just an amazing group of people. We have some elected officials, too, and I will ask, first of all, Anna Valencia. Is here. Anna, our Chicago City Clerk and future City Club Speaker. And then we have State Rep Curtis Tarver. And of course, Evadina Delgado. Evadina Delgado, thank you also for being here. If there are any other elected officials in the room and I didn't mention you, please give me a wave or stand up. Perfect. I just want to make sure we acknowledge you. Thank you to all of these folks. What a great sampling of private sector, public sector. Lester McKeever is here, a legend of the civic community. This is we come together so that we can have these conversations with all these amazing people and do our part to move this city and state forward. So excited to have you all in the room today. We're going to hear from an incredible woman who is the Lieutenant Governor of the state of Illinois, and I'm honored to be able to sit down with her after she makes a few remarks and ask a few questions and get the real story of what's going on at the State House, what's going on in Springfield, what's going on here in Chicago, and what's going on with the Lieutenant Governor. It's so good to have her back after such a long time. So we're looking forward to that conversation, and I do want to incorporate any of your questions. So please, if you have questions, write them down and get them up to me. Amanda's here. By the way, it was Amanda's birthday yesterday. Where is Amanda? Happy birthday, Amanda. She's probably out working. There she is. Happy birthday, Amanda, yesterday. Big birthday. So Amanda's here. Get the questions up to us, and we'll get it into the conversation. So before that, we're going to ask our special guest to join us on the stage for some remarks. So please, you all know who she is. You're all here to see her and hear from her, the one and only Lieutenant Governor of the state of Illinois, Juliana Stratton. Thank you, Lieutenant Governor.
Thank you so much. Appreciate
Welcome
that.
Back.
Thank you.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. And thank you so much for sharing a piece of your day with me. I am absolutely thrilled for this discussion. And if we have not met personally, and I did try to get to as many tables as I could, but I think they all were on this side of the room, so I'm sorry. I'll hopefully get to see all of you later. But If we haven't met personally, I am Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton. And before I get started, I want to take a moment to thank the City Club, Dan Gibbons and Amanda Auguste, for making this happen. And of course, I want to acknowledge my good friend and chair of the Board of Governors, Jackie Robinson Ivey. And although I could spend the next hour thanking each of you for the way that you care for our shared community, for the sake of time, I'll just say this. To the educators, business owners, industry and thought leaders, healthcare providers, government and fellow elected leaders, and anyone who just may be in the room whose name is Brian and you're married to me, thank you all for being in this room. Brian, can you just stand up? He's your second gentleman of the state of Illinois. Thank you all for being here today. Thank you to so many members of my team in the office of the Lieutenant Governor, brilliant people that I get to work beside every single day. And in his absence, I certainly want to thank Governor J.B. Pritzker for demonstrating what it means. Yes. For demonstrating what it means to lead with compassion and responsibility. To introduce my story, I first have to introduce the Stevens brothers. Just four generations ago, my great-great-grandfather William and his twin brother Daniel were enslaved. And sometime after President Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation, the man that owned these brothers gave them a large plot of land in Mississippi. So they farmed and they fed their families and neighbors with what the land produced. They built a school to feed the minds of these fellow residents and a church to feed their souls. The Stevens brothers turned that plot of land into a community. In fact, their land is known today as the town of Stevensville, Mississippi. Now, because of fundamentally racist policies and practices enforced by the USDA at the time, my family was stripped from the land's title, security, and any potential wealth. But what William and Daniel didn't know then was that they had already changed something in their DNA. Years later, that glimmer of change became a reading light, illuminating the pages of a law book on my lap, where I sat in my home on the south side of Chicago as a 1L student at DePaul University's College of Law. That reading light grew into a lamp, casting warmth throughout a room where I became the caretaker for my ailing mother during her final years of her life, as she lived with Alzheimer's and it took its toll. And when a state representative promised to strip away programs to help care for aging Illinoisans like my mom, I must say, that lamplight, well, it became a guiding torch. And it was that torch, with flame born from a mere spark of change, that I held when I sat down for a meeting with someone who said that he was thinking big about Illinois' future and wanted me to join him on the journey of turning our state around. When J.B. Pritzker asked me to run by his side, I had only been a state representative for 7 months. But I honestly believed that he was the best person to move our state forward. And as someone who loves this state, I just couldn't pass up the opportunity to join him in the work of transforming Illinois for the better. But I want you to know that I agreed to this on one condition. I said, and I really said this, I don't want to do this if you just want me to do the things you don't want to do. There's a lot of issues that I'm passionate about, and I want to continue providing leadership. And to his credit, he immediately replied, I wouldn't have it any other way, because there are a lot of challenges in our state, and I need your partnership. And thus, the little flash of light that the Stevens brothers managed to spark grew into a fully fledged spotlight under which I stand before you today. It's the honor of a lifetime for me to serve as your lieutenant governor and Governor Pritzker's partner in governance. For 6 years, my office has led a diverse portfolio that reinforces both our administration's commitment to delivering prosperity to the working people of Illinois and my own passion for equitable growth. I oversee an array of councils and priorities rooted in various issues facing the people of Illinois. I chair the Illinois Council on Women and Girls, which helps to put us on a path of making Illinois the best state in the nation for women and girls, which, by the way, we make up half of our state's population. And we do this work by addressing the barriers they face and identifying opportunities to increase equity. I'm inspired by the women and girls that I meet in every corner of our state, and I want them, just like I want for my own four daughters, to be proud to call Illinois home and know that it's a place where they can not only live, work, and do business, but where they will be protected and they can live as their authentic selves. In fact, the council inspired the development of a unique mentorship-style program called Girls Lead, where school-age girls shadow women in senior leadership positions throughout the government, exposing them not only to potential career paths, but to the fact that their voices really do matter in policymaking. In a similar vein, earlier this year, I launched a new initiative called We Thrive, which is dedicated to empowering women on their lifelong journey toward financial wellness. I've traveled the state hosting small group discussions called We Chats with diverse women to better understand their experiences and why there is still such a pervasive confidence gap when it comes to women and their personal finances. These conversations have been so insightful as we consider future policy and legislative solutions to address the widening gender pay gap and the generational legacy of inequality. My office also houses the Justice, Equity, and Opportunity Initiative, or JEO as we call it, which guides the administration's vision of transforming the criminal legal system through an approach that is rooted in holistic restoration. I believe that everyone deserves to be safe, no matter their zip code. And one of the ways that we advance community safety is by helping people to exit corrections facilities to successfully reintegrate into their communities with access to employment, housing, healthcare, and educational opportunities. This is what will help us break the pattern of them cycling in and out of that system. I've also been working hand in hand with First Lady MK Pritzker to advance trauma-informed and gender-responsive practices and approaches to support women in the carceral system, 90% of whom have experienced childhood trauma. Many of these women are also mothers to young children, and if we don't help them on their healing journey and to successfully reunite with their families, then that trauma will only be passed down to the next generation, and that cycle will begin all over again. The JEO also oversees specialized programs, which I chair, including our Healing Centered Illinois Task Force and the Restore, Reinvest, and Renew program, which invests 25% of adult use cannabis tax revenue back into communities most impacted by the devastating war on drugs. From violence prevention, youth development, and reentry services to civil legal aid and economic development, our three grants are repairing the harm done to so many communities with the voices of those most impacted right at the very center. So those are just a few highlights happening alongside major reforms to better the lives of the people of Illinois, including raising the minimum wage, mandating paid leave for all workers, protecting a woman's right to choose what's best for her body and her provider's ability to deliver appropriate care, stopping predatory insurance practices like step therapy, eliminating preschool and childcare deserts through the Smart Start Illinois program, and not just expanding access to higher education, but making it affordable too. Yes. Throughout our work, it has become apparent that everything, and I mean absolutely everything, is connected. And no industry better demonstrates what I mean than Illinois' largest industry, agriculture. Now, if I wasn't already sure, I'm positive that the love of the Stevens brothers carried for their land exists in me because I find such joy in uplifting Illinois' agriculture. Ag connects us all, started as a nice line in a speech, and soon became the title of a fully-fledged effort to bridge a gap between rural and urban priorities. What is often skipped over in our conversations about agriculture is how vital the profession is to all of our success. Agriculture is not just a guy on a tractor in the middle of a cornfield, although that is certainly an essential piece. But agriculture is an avenue for business, law, communications, tech, innovation, and it literally determines our food supply, not just our household supply, but the supply of our neighbors, communities, state, and beyond. You may or may not know that Illinois makes a significant global impact as a hub for agriculture and food manufacturing. In fact, we rank third in the nation in the export of agricultural commodities, with $8.2 billion worth of goods shipped to other countries. So, when one hand places a little seed into the soil in Sullivan, Illinois, a ripple sets off across the nation and indeed the world. If we want to eliminate food insecurity, we first have to ensure that our farmers have what they need to produce food and to do so in sustainable ways. Our grocery stores must be built and ready to receive that food, and our people should be able to shop for healthy, nutrient-dense, and culturally relevant food that provides a connection to their family's heritage. But we also have to create the economic conditions to ensure that families make enough money to be able to buy those groceries. And we need to make sure that young people know how to explore careers and find opportunities in the agri-food industry. Just this past September, my office partnered with the Illinois Agri-Food Alliance to host our state's first ever Agri-Food Workforce Summit, where we focused on addressing the need to prepare the ag workforce for the tech innovations already happening and those that are on the horizon. So let's just pause right there and think about that for a moment. What started as an ancestral story became an unexpected passion of mine and turned into an executive-level initiative, which then led to a statewide Agri-Food Workforce Summit rooted in educating future generations. So we need our history to inspire our future, just like we need the soil to feed our children. And while I know that we won't all agree on every issue, I do suspect that everyone in this room agrees that we should work to end childhood hunger in our state. And expanding opportunities in agriculture, including urban agriculture, are just some of the ways that we're working to do just that. I know I'm sitting down for a fireside chat with Dan shortly and answering some questions in more detail, but I do want to just spend a few final moments talking about the road ahead. Recently, I can't count the number of people who have asked, where do we go from here? And every time I'm faced with that question, I almost have to catch my breath at all that it encompasses. Before we go anywhere, we first have to face some hard truths. We have yet to really grapple with the trauma and massive change left in the wake of a global pandemic. The pressure people are feeling under the weight of inflated prices and the lack of affordable housing, it's real. Young people are afraid to inherit a future that cannot or will not support their dreams. And our elders are afraid that the future they did inherit has forgotten about them. And I certainly don't have all of the answers. But here's what I do know. I know that while there are forces joyfully sowing suspicion and hatred among us, I refuse to walk toward the widening crack of division that has appeared in our streets. I know that we can pursue a thriving economy responsibly without sacrificing our values. And I know for a fact that we need each other more now than ever before. My blood runs with a fundamental belief that our only way forward is together. The future of our state, our country, our very world hinges on our ability to look someone else in the eye and see ourselves reflected back. At this moment, our eyes are adjusting to the darkness of what is unknown, and our hands are stilling with the acceptance that the what-ifs cannot undo the what-is. So we can do one of two things. We can stand here on the stoop and wait to be dragged into the shadows, or we can be the light to illuminate the path in a direction of our choosing. We can interlace our fingers with the person standing beside us and take a step forward together. The Stevens brothers lived through some very dark times, but that only served to create a passion for collective care so deep that decades later, their passion is now helping to lead an entire state forward through this new kind of fog. My work has been and always will be rooted in community. I find more strength in we than I, because no one, not myself, not anyone else, can bring every answer to every table. But what I can do is scoot over, pull up a chair next to my own, and make space for someone else at that table. I can listen to understand and speak to be understood. This is how my ancestors transformed horror into hope, and that is how I will transform anguish into progress. It is an indescribable honor to face this moment in time by your sides. Thank you for being here. And Dan, let's continue the conversation. Thank you, everyone.
Take a seat there. Perfect.
You want me?
Right here is perfect.
Thank you.
Oh. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Perfect. You hit so much, and you hit on so much, I have to reorganize my notes here.
Uh-oh.
That was excellent. Thank you, Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton. That's a mouthful, Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton. Thank you for being here. It's been a while since you've been here.
It has been. I'm glad to be here.
It means so much to have you back. You've been busy, right?
We've been very busy.
Good.
And I'm busy right now, but I stopped for a moment.
And thank you for that. Thank you for that.
Wanted lunch.
To share some of these messages. Do you think those Stevens brothers ever would have, they had some foresight. Do you think they would have seen you sitting in this chair as Lieutenant Governor of the state of Illinois?
You know what I always think? I always think about them in that church praying for their legacy. And maybe not knowing exactly what it looked like, but I imagine that they prayed that their children and their children's children and on down the line would be able to live in a way that was freer than they were able to live. So I don't know if they imagined exactly this, but I do know that they prayed for me.
Glad they did. We're luckier. We're a fortunate state because of that. You have done so much alongside Governor Pritzker, of course, and in your own right. Where do you begin to prioritize? Because just knowing your priorities, the governor's priorities, the Democratic Party's priorities, the state's ability to determine what goes on in each of those silos, how do you prioritize what you're really going to go after and make your goals come to light?
In the office of the lieutenant governor,
yes.
Or more broadly?
Yes.
Yeah, well, I mean...
In the office.
So I'll talk about the office. I do want to say that when we first came into office, and I was a state representative, as I mentioned, we came into an environment, and certainly fiscally, that we had to turn things around and we had to really roll up our sleeves and get to work. I mean, it was a time that we had gone almost 2 years without a budget. There was a budget impasse. We saw the impact that it had, not just on everyday working families, but on our social service agencies and that infrastructure, the safety net infrastructure. We saw the impact it had on our state universities and in just so many ways. And I'm really proud of the work that we have done to first prioritize that, because that's our number one responsibility, to pass a balanced budget every year. And I'm grateful for our partners in the General Assembly who are here today, who have helped us to do that. And so that was number one. And I think for me in my office, you know, with equity being something that was such an important focus for me, we set a mission statement that we are focused on all 13 million people of the state of Illinois, but we wanted to bring a particular lens of leadership to focus on those who are too often left out and left behind, who need to be reminded that they are, in fact, a part of our democracy and they deserve a seat at the table. And so we started thinking about issues that people may not always think about, but I had this wonderful opportunity, because if you've ever looked at the job description of the office of the lieutenant governor, there's a lot of room to build on. And I was like, I'm going to take advantage of that opportunity. I mentioned my mother, who I lost to Alzheimer's in 2016. One of the first things I did was an initiative that was focused on caregivers. So many people, many in this room, I'm sure, are caregivers like I was. Many who are what's called, they call it the sandwich generation, kind of, you know, wedged between raising children and caring for a parent. But I heard someone say it's really a panini generation, because a panini, you put it in the heat and you squeeze it extra tight. That's what it felt like. But we did an initiative called Through Our Eyes, and I listened to caregivers all across the state about how we could better support them. And one thing they said is, we don't always know when, you know, Alzheimer's has been diagnosed. It comes so late that we can't even plan. So because of that, we passed the first in the nation legislation to make sure medical providers have to get trained in how to screen for dementia and Alzheimer's. And that will help earlier diagnoses. So, and other times it's from listening to people. I'm a restorative justice practitioner, have been for a couple of decades. I believe the wisdom is in the room. So it's not about sitting in my office thinking I'm going to know what people need. It's getting into the community. And many of you have seen me in community, and you know how important it is, not just around the Chicagoland area, but I go downstate quite a bit, because, you know, when we were campaigning, people said, you're not going to come back here. And it was important to say, yes, I am coming back. And we did. And the governor and I both go downstate quite a bit. So a lot of it is listening to people and finding out from their wisdom. People who know their communities and love their communities, they are the very best ones to help us understand what their communities need. And I kind of see that as the focal point for how we decide what priorities we will lift up.
That's great. I'm going to ask actually later what some of the priorities you think we need to be lifting up here. So thank you for setting me up for that, because we keep talking about being in the room at City Club. And these are all folks that are in the room doing their part from all these different sectors to move things forward. When you're in the room, you're listening, you're talking, you're not prescribing solutions, right? As I think you said, you're listening to experts and others. Have you been able to take what you've heard And has that guided your policy? Has that guided your priorities? Or are you, have you figured out what you want to go after and then you go and do that? How does that work? How does the listening factor in?
Let me give you a good example. And one of the things I want to say is I want to make sure that we understand when I talk about experts, it's not dependent on the degree someone might have. It's not dependent on a title someone might have. It might be, I have lived this thing. Yeah. And because I have lived it, I can tell you some things that you might not get out of a book or a course or anything else. And so it's really important to make sure those who are, as we often hear, certainly in many circles, those closest to the problem are often closest to the solution. But an example is last year, I sat down with a group of Black women birth workers because we were having so many conversations about reproductive rights and reproductive freedoms here in Illinois. And one of the things that I knew is that Black women here in Illinois are still 3 times more likely to die from pregnancy-related complications. And most of those deaths are preventable. So it's inexcusable. And it's a national maternal mortality crisis. I mean, we are seeing this across the country, specifically with Black women and other marginalized groups, but it's really a crisis with Black women. And so I brought together a group of Black women birth workers. They were doulas and midwives to help educate me about what they were seeing and what was happening on the ground, because to me, they were the experts. You are helping women to have safe and healthy births, and yet we haven't figured out how to do that more broadly. And from those conversations, so kind of going back to that process, from that conversation, it was such a lively conversation, and it was so good and just so energizing that they said, can we do this every month? And I was like, absolutely not. I do not have time for that. But what I will do is I will call another meeting together, and we will bring together our Department of Human Services and Healthcare and Family Services, and we'll bring together the Department of Public Health and those from our administration so we can start thinking about it. It turns out then after that, the governor was having these same kinds of conversations with his team and some of these same women and others in the reproductive health space. And what it turned out, which I'm so glad that I could be a part of helping to lead, is this summer, the governor signed the Birth Equity Initiative into law, which makes sure that now there is parity between Medicaid and private insurance, and we eliminated cost sharing for doulas and midwives and lactation consultants and so many in the system who need to help women have safe, healthy births, and not just the birth, but 1 year postpartum. So that legislation included, well, now the law includes 1 year of home visiting, because people need support 1 year after bringing home a new baby. It includes a diaper pilot project, because people don't know that almost 50% of families can't afford clean diapers in this country. And so now we're going to do a pilot program where families will get clean diapers. It includes helping these birth workers to have not just access, well, they already could be covered by Medicaid, but to be able to go through the process and get technical assistance so that they could be set up for success. And I'm really excited about this part. Well, I'm excited about a couple more, but one I will say is the first birthing center will open on the south side of Chicago with $1 million coming from this initiative. So, and if you didn't know, the south side of Chicago is a maternal health care desert. So many OB centers and medical centers have closed. So to even find a place, if you wanted to give birth in a hospital or needed to, it is very hard. So there will be a birthing center. And then finally, it includes a child tax credit for families, a $50 million child tax credit for families with children 12 and under, just to put a little more money in their pockets. Because honestly, sometimes that's what families need to make sure that their family can be healthy.
Yeah. So I'm going to scratch my next question, which was, can you come back every month? But
no.
Okay.
I don't have time.
So if you were to come back every month, or let's say every couple months, that just appeared. What should we talk about being in the room? And what I really appreciate is we see things here at City Club, and in these conversations, you were, what did you call it? Wisdom in the room.
The wisdom is always in the room.
The wisdom's always in the room. Okay, so we might have to factor that. And we say be in the room. We see things happen. This is where the rubber meets the road. You know, we had Secretary of State Alexei Janulius come in and speak here about book banning, and then all of a sudden there's a law, and it's the first in the nation. And then he's testifying in front of Congress, and we've got all these great, you know, librarians and associations of libraries here. We're seeing these things happen. We're the example of the Birth Center, and this stuff happens, and it comes out of these rooms. It comes out of these conversations. So it's real, and I think what we're doing here matters. I always like to remind people of that. But I'm getting to a question, because what should we be focusing on? Mm-hmm. What should we be seeing? What should we be getting ahead of? What are you seeing a little bit further out that we should be talking about in this room? Perhaps it'll guide our next program. Perhaps it'll entice you back here to come and speak again. But what issues do we need to be looking out a little bit ahead of here?
Yeah, I mean, clearly we need to continue conversations. And certainly this has been a conversation we've heard over the last couple of weeks about how to make life more affordable for working families. And I mean, we've made a lot of progress around that. As I've talked about, we've raised the minimum wage. When I think about things like the Rebuild Illinois capital plan, which investing in infrastructure, roads and bridges, railways, waterways, hospitals, schools, we've also created 500,000 jobs through that. We have paid leave for all workers, because people should not have to lose their job because they have to take sick time or care for themselves or care for a sick child. So there's a lot of things that we have done to try to make, and you know, we eliminated the grocery tax this year in this year's budget. So there's a number of things that we have done, but one of the things that we all realize is that sometimes families will, you know, we all know, those of us in this room will look at the statistics and we'll know, you know, we know the statistics about inflation, or we know, you know, that, oh, things are pretty good here or there, we're looking at rates. But that is not always translating into what somebody is feeling in their home when they are trying to go to the grocery store and provide for their children, or they're looking for quality childcare, which we've also done to make childcare more affordable for working families. So I think part of it is really just thinking about what are the kinds of things that we need to do that really translates into people feeling it, and knowing what that feels like, and also being able to talk about the issues in a way that people can understand this is what this means. On the other hand, I think that it's critically important that we continue to do the work to think about how we're going to defend the values that we care about here in Illinois. Again, we've made a lot of progress. We've enshrined reproductive freedoms. We believe that people should marry who they love. We have continued to, stand up for working families. We are a welcoming state, and making sure that we continue to defend the values that we believe need to be protected, while also continuing the economic progression that we have been on. We've passed now, as I talked about sort of what we didn't do in the last administration that really hurt our state. When I talked about, not going 2 years without a balanced budget, without any budget at all, and now we've passed 6 consecutive balanced budgets, and come February, the governor will propose a 7th. You know, previously we had 8 credit rating downgrades. Now we've had 9 credit rating upgrades. We had like $60,000 in our rainy day fund. And now I think we have close to 2.
Don't start talking about where there's money. I think there are a lot of people ready to tap into that.
Yeah, don't tap into it, because we need that. But I think, are we going to face challenges? Yes. But our commitment has always been that we are going to pass balanced budgets, be fiscally responsible, make sure that we think about, what kinds of, efficient and responsible decisions we can make when it comes to the resources of state government, but doing that without sacrificing the values that we hold so dearly. So I think we all need to be thinking about, what does that look like? What do we need to be doing next? And we need to make sure that you're reaching out and telling us. As I said, it's not about people sitting in an office somewhere, but you know, in this room, you all know that, because when I was coming in, some of you had some very clear ideas of what we need to do. But I do think civic engagement is something that is critically important, and not just for young people, although for young people it is important. But how do we get more people to understand that their voices matter in policymaking, that we need to hear from them, that you can visit, call, write elected officials, that you can come to Springfield, that you can write a bill and try to get that bill passed, that you can file a witness slip and make sure you're making your voice heard on what kind of legislation you want to see passed. And I just think that, you know, we're going to continue on all the big stuff. We're going to continue doing that. But I do think that it is critically important that we think about how to engage people, everyday people from communities across our state, to be a part of this process so that they know, as I said before, they are a part of our democracy, that democracy is a verb, and that we need them to be engaged, from voting to being participants in the, you know, legislative process.
So I was hearing a lot of almost juxtapositions, and we talked about this with the governor when he was here a few months ago. There's been a bit of a reset politically, and I mean bigger picture reset of who is involved with what parties and what different parties stand for, and what could there possibly be, the way that you're talking and the way that Governor Pritzker has talked a lot about fiscal, say, conservatism, right, and yet very progressive policies and liberal policies. You're getting a lot of things done with the resources that you have. There's a bit of a balance there. Could that potentially reflect in the future politics of how this country moves forward after this election?
I don't know if I can predict that right now. What I can say is that the way that we can do the other things that we care about, the way that we can invest in expanding access to childcare, the way that we can eliminate $1 billion in medical debt, which we are doing right now, the way that we can do those things is by being fiscally responsible. When you don't have a balanced budget, just like any of our own households, that balanced budget, when you have that little extra surplus, you're going to Starbucks twice a week, aren't you? Or you're doing whatever you do. You know what I mean? Like, it's really about thinking about how can we make the right decisions so that we can invest in the things that we care about. The problem comes if we try to think about all the big ideas, and there are a lot of big ideas, and there are a lot of things that we would love to do, but you cannot do everything. And so you have to be very strategic, but you can't do any of it without getting your fiscal house in order. And that was the first order of the day. So getting that done has allowed us to do some of the other things that have been so beneficial to Illinoisans in every corner of our state. And so I think they kind of go hand in hand.
So with that, in every corner of the state, there are 4 or 6 corners in this great big state. Yeah. You talked about ag, and you talked about food deserts, and you talked about how do you balance? They're very different people from the northwest corner down to the south. How do you balance all of that? You're from Chicago. You're from the south side. You're a black woman.
Yep.
You care a lot about women's issues. You care about a lot about, you know, bringing up the Democratic next leaders. How are you balancing that with downstate,
mm-hmm.
and some different priorities that they probably have?
Yeah. I mean, I think there is no group that is a monolith. People have different issues, even in the same community. Dare I say, even in the same household sometimes.
So we're all about to hear on Thanksgiving.
No, but, you know, One of the things that I have tried to prioritize, and that's why that name Ag Connects Us All really stuck with me, because what I started to realize in traveling across the state was that there was so much talk of this urban-rural divide. And I wanted to reframe that to be the urban-rural bridge, because I really felt like there were so many issues that I was hearing about when I traveled downstate that were the exact same issues that I heard on the south and west sides of Chicago, that I heard in many of our suburban communities. And it was important for me to say, how can we build some collective strength in working on those issues together? Food insecurity is one of them. There should not be, you know, in a state where agriculture is our number one industry, how is it that so many people in both rural communities and in urban communities and suburban as well continue to be hungry? Access to health care, same issues. When I talked about the maternal health care desert on the south side of Chicago, that exists in rural communities as well. How can we bring our collective power together to think about solving those challenges by building a bridge? I happen to chair the governor's Rural Affairs Council, and I've learned so much about the kinds of issues that we should be thinking about in our rural communities. And one of the ways that we're able to get things done is by saying, I know a little bit about that, and we need to be talking about that. So I just kind of go in as myself. I don't change anything. When I represented the 5th District, it was a very diverse district as a state representative. Some of the most, some of the wealthiest communities and some of the most under-resourced. And somebody said, well, are you a different person because you go to different parts of your district? Absolutely not. My goal is always to be my authentic and genuine self, and to show up genuinely in a posture of listening. And I think that's what's most important. When they asked me and said, you're not going to come back down here, and I said, yes, I will. What they really wanted was not just my presence geographically. They wanted to know, are you going to listen to us? Are you going to ask us, do you see us as the wisdom in the room as well? And I think it has served me well to go into every community and say, just want to talk to you. I just came from a downstate swing. I was in Vienna and Murfreesboro and Carbondale and all of these places. And just was in Coal City last week. And I got a note from someone from Coal City who said, I wasn't sure where this was going to go, that you wanted to come here and kind of talk about some of these issues. But I was really grateful as to how that meeting went. You listened to us. And I think that's always going to be the most powerful thing that we can do to move our state forward.
I have a few questions here. One that just came in, or let's talk. Can we talk about transportation for a minute?
I mean,
Anthony Kinsey from Ramirez and Company asked if you could address what are the state's plans to provide funding for transportation throughout the state, and of course we have, you know, Evadina Delgado and Curtis Tarver here. I know there's a lot of talk lately about transit, and this is in with the theme of again, downstate and in Chicago. So address it all at once, very quickly. How are you going to solve the whole transportation problem with no funding?
Yeah, I mean, this question, you all know that conversations are going on. There's working groups. There clearly, again, members of the General Assembly who are here who will really be helping to bring leadership to this issue. I mean, it's not something that I can tell you today as conversations continue. Here's what's going to happen. Those are conversations that will continue, and we'll bring all the stakeholders together to see what's possible. Today I cannot say this is the path. But I do know that people are, this is a topic that people are very focused on, and making sure that people have access to adequate transportation. I think that the Rebuild Illinois Capital Plan and making sure that as we think about transportation hubs and Illinois and Chicago in particular, is the reason why we're such a world-class city and region is because of, you know, when we think of O'Hare and some of the other transportation outlets that we have. But that doesn't mean that when, we think about everyday Illinoisans and Chicagoans, that there's not a need to continue those conversations. So those are happening. And as we head to the next legislative session, you know, hopefully there will be some more clarity about the direction that that's going to go.
Great. And we at City Club are committed to having some more of those conversations, too.
Absolutely.
So as these ideas come forward, we've talked about this. We take your ideas and we incorporate them into who we bring to this platform. So yeah. I'll offer that up, not only for transportation, but on a host of these whole host of these issues. Another question here from a member, Shara Rivette from the Chicago Children's Advocacy Center. They're launching the Chicago Children's Advocacy Center is launching Can Hope, which will create a multi-agency co-located service system for domestic violence survivors. Mm-hmm. What do you see as a state's role in helping Illinois' largest city accomplish this? So domestic violence survivors and a multi-agency approach to that. That the CCAC is helping lead the charge on.
Well, I'm very familiar with the work of CCAC, as I was one of the founding board members of the Chicago Children's Advocacy Center, and very much appreciate the model of thinking about sort of having these different agencies co-located in one particular building to provide those resources. And so, you know, I'm interested in learning more, and I certainly think the model is helpful because sometimes people don't realize how much harm systems can do to people. And that's just a fact, and I'm a part of a system. But the bottom line is when we look sort of historically, we can see ways that we say we want to help, but either for historic reasons or just from, you know, how people can get entangled, anything that can be done to streamline access to help is better. So it sounds like a wonderful concept. It certainly, I know, is based on what the Chicago Children's Advocacy Center has done. So that's appealing. What I cannot say today as we continue the conversations, and I don't know, you know, but I don't know what type of help. But certainly this is the time to begin talking with legislators and seeing what you're interested in. I can't speak to what that will look like. And I certainly know that right now we have made significant investments in ending domestic violence and domestic violence resources through the network and other ways. And so, and as the chair of the Council on Women and Girls, which has a subcommittee on addressing gender-based violence, we believe that we should continue to do that work. So I can't speak to that particular initiative and what the state can do. Those are conversations that will happen just like every other conversation around it.
And again, one that we hope to talk more about here.
But it is important.
Right, Jackie? We've talked about that as an important topic. So.
That's right.
So many topics that we appreciate your insight on. We only have a couple more minutes, so I want to step back and talk a little more broadly. And Charmaine Riquette asked something I'd like to close out and maybe talk a little bit about politics.
Sure.
And her question was a little broad from the Trump administration aspect of things. But I think what we could talk about is where do you see Illinois moving forward from here? How do you, and I know you addressed some of that, but how do you see Illinois moving forward and perhaps with some opportunities? What are some opportunities out of this? We're going to move forward. How can Illinois move forward politically out of this in from your point of view?
How do we move forward politically? Well, look, I mean, we just had an election that one of the things that I'm actually very proud of here in Illinois is the work that we have done with Governor Pritzker's leadership and I certainly want to acknowledge Chair Lisa Hernandez as well of the Democratic Party of Illinois for, you know, strengthening and building an infrastructure of a party here. And by the way, I know that City Club is nonpartisan, but I'm speaking about what we have done as a Democratic Party because that's what I know. And so we've done a lot to strengthen our party and to make sure it functions as a strong political party. And because of that, I'm proud that even as we saw some of the shifting that we did around the country, quite frankly, including, you know, some headwinds in Illinois, that we held every Democratic seat in the Senate, every Democratic seat in the House, every congressional seat we held. And I think it's important to realize that, that as people are, you know, having so many talking heads have different opinions about things, it's important to recognize that, you know, what we were able to do here in Illinois. And we will continue to do that. We'll continue to strengthen the party and continue working on the best solutions that we can find. I mean, look, I mean, anything that's going to be helpful, and I know Charmaine asked about the Trump administration, anything that's going to be beneficial to the people of Illinois, we will work with the administration to make happen. But we are also going to stand firm in defending the rights of Illinoisans and the freedoms that we have worked so hard to protect over these last several years. As I said, we've protected and enshrined reproductive freedoms. We stand up for our LGBTQ plus communities. We stand up for workers' rights. We make sure that it is a welcoming state for our immigrant communities. These are things that we value here in Illinois. So we will continue to defend those values, even as we continue to work on the economic issues, even as we try to find some points where we can say, what do we need to do, you know, to move forward? One of the things that I don't think is helpful, and one of the things that I'm not going to do, is I'm not going to point fingers, because I don't see that as being the most important thing to do right now. There's going to be a lot of data that we have to analyze. We have to understand kind of what does need to be done differently. What can we do more of? Those conversations happen after every single election, and it needs to be based on the data, not based on, you know, just everyone who has an opinion, and there are a lot of opinions, as I know you all know. So, you know, we're going to keep doing the work and do it with pride. I said in my remarks that it has been the greatest honor of my life to serve as your lieutenant governor and to do so alongside someone that I truly do believe is the best governor in the nation. And and we are as determined as ever to keep providing good, responsible leadership for the people of Illinois and to do this work alongside each and every one of you. So that's how I see the path forward. And, you know, there'll be lots of other political discussions that will be had, but that doesn't change what we must do in this moment, as I said before, to really decide what kind of state we want to be and how we want to participate in this particular moment in history. And I really do believe, as I said, that our only path forward is together.
Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton, one quick question. What's next for you? Do you see any titles with fewer syllables?
One quick question, Dan says. Look,
it's the City Club.
Yeah, it's the City Club. Look, I mean it when I say I love what I do. And I feel so blessed to be in this role. I feel blessed to do it alongside the governor. It's the best job that I could think of, and I'm going to keep doing it for the people of Illinois, like all of you.
Well, we're so honored to have you in this state of Illinois and, of course, here at the City Club of Chicago. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton.
Thank you, everyone.
We look forward to having you. Thank you all for taking time out of your day to be with us today, and enjoy your week.
Thank you.